Good afternoon. This is the professor, Dr. Ron Daniels, president of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century and distinguished lecturer emeritus from York College, City University of New York. I welcome you to this June 22nd edition of Vantage Point here on WBAI 99.5 FM on the Pacifica Network in collaboration with ycradio.org. That's right, the York College Radio online radio community is plugged in. Well, first of all, I want to continue to reiterate to be safe, be careful. New York has actually done a great job modeling for the country. And so we want to continue to set that example. Coming up on the show momentarily, we're going to have two major topics. We're going to have Paradise Gray, who is going to be a regular with us. He is, of course, the architect of X-Clan and the founder of the Black Watch movement. And he'll be talking to us about hip-hop and the Black liberation, past and present. And then we get a report directly from Tulsa. We were not able to get Reverend Robert Turner last week. It was not his fault. Actually, there was a nationwide collapse of one of the cell phone systems. But he'll be with us today to give his reaction to Trump's not-so-great MAGA rally in Tulsa. But he'll talk to us about much more than that. Quickly, I want to encourage you, if you did not see it, you need to see it. The Institute of the Black World 21st Century, the National African-American Reparations Commission had a huge, powerful forum on Juneteenth. And it was on reparations in H.R. 40. So you can go to the IBW website, ibw21.org, ibw21.org, to view it. It was awesome. Over 110,000 views so far and growing. And you can go to the IBW website and see it as well. You can also access it through reparations.com, com with two M's, because it's for commission. That means reparations commission. reparationscom.com. You really, really want to check that out. Well, just have to quickly say that, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same. A noose. You know, this brother who's the only African-American race car driver for NASCAR, and it's always been a problem with NASCAR, but a couple of weeks ago, he asked and challenged NASCAR to take down those Confederate flags and all of that. And they did. But wouldn't you know it, yesterday in Talladega, the race was actually canceled, but in his garage was found a noose. That's right, in the 21st century, a noose. And then there was a plane flying over the stadium with a Confederate flag saying, defund NASCAR. So, hey, it's on. Also, just want to quickly announce that Reverend Mark Thompson, our dear beloved friend, who, by the way, was one of the moderators of the forum that we did on this past Friday, and Jews for Racial and Economic Justice, Rabbi Ellen Lippman, are having a major rally tomorrow. Elders for Black Lives, gathered to say defund the NYPD. That's tomorrow, June 24th, 12 o'clock p.m., the plaza of the east side of City Hall. Mask will be required. So they're not doing this MAGA stuff, right? That's a clear distinction between the progressive liberal radical side and these idiots. So mask will be required. Bring your hand sanitizer. And you have to be socially distanced, and the marshals will enforce mask and distance for this event. So people are saying, yeah, we can get out in the streets, we can demonstrate, we can do what we can get our message across, but we are going to do it responsibly. And I give great props to our side, our organizers all over the country who are trying to maintain that social distance, having their mask on, but still taking, still it's risky, but saying it's worth it, but we're going to do it in a socially responsible and medically responsible way. So just want to say that as we move on. Quickly, also, we'll be talking about WBAI buddies today. Just heard Gary Bird, you know, pushing a very important premium. Dr. Ben, we need that support desperately. Gary Bird is the best, in my opinion. He's the best that ever did it. And we love Emotep Gary Bird. So we're coming back today. We want five WBAI buddies, which I'll be talking about the last part of the program. Well, to get us started off today, we want to bring into our microphones again a dear beloved friend who is educating me about hip-hop and hip-hop generation and all of its contributions, and will be continuing to do so by way of Vantage Point. It is none other than Paradise Gray, the architect of X-Clan and the founder of the Black Watch movement. Brother Paradise Gray, welcome again to Vantage Point.
Hey, peace, good brother Ron Daniels.
Yes, well, let's dive right into it because we got, you know, we got limited time. We got a lot of ground to cover. I'm wondering whether you would just care to just comment in general before we get into the meat of our discussion about what you're seeing in the streets in terms of this multiracial, black-led, multi-generational mass movement in the streets that's everywhere, all over the world as well. And it's also in Pittsburgh, you know, where you're at.
Absolutely. I'd just like to say that, you know, it's kind of amazing. You know, a lot of people used to look down on young people when it came to the movement and their involvement in the streets at a grassroots level or many other levels. And, you know, young people who a lot of people didn't think knew what to do, when the time came, they knew exactly what to do. I'd like to say peace and love to all the young people out there doing your thing. You know, fight the power. Keep doing what you do.
All right. Well, let's dive into our topic for today. You know, as the architect of X-Clan and the founder of the Black Watch movement, talk to us about hip-hop and black liberation. That is in terms of the groups, artists, and individuals back in the day. So to take us back and sort of talk to us about some of the artists who were, you know, down with black liberation and some of the groups who were down with black liberation, because you were there, you were eyewitness, you were in the middle of it. So talk to us about that.
First of all, I'd like to thank all the great elders of our culture and music, the ones who laid the foundation for us, Bob Marley and James Brown and George Clinton, and all the elders like the Last Poets, who just celebrated their 50th anniversary of their first album. Peace and love to the Watch Prophets and all those great artists out there who laid the foundation for us, like the great Harry Belafonte. The first generation of hip-hop artists laid down a foundation that included party music and conscious music. And one of the first conscious songs that really blew up was Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five. You know, they laid out their song called The Message. Curtis Blow did a song called The Breaks. So in the history of hip-hop, in the early days, especially when the pioneers was laying it down, they did give us a good blueprint of a great balance, not just songs about the streets, but also songs about culture and black power. And throughout the years, we saw it merge and change in many different ways. One of the greatest times for black conscious music was the golden era of hip hop, with artists like Public Enemy, X-Clan, KRS-One, and Poor Righteous Teachers. During that time, it was very a time that was very much like today in the late 80s and early 90s when Yusef Hawkins was murdered. You know, we had our elder in Brooklyn, Sonny Carson, leading the marches, and they used to do a series of marches called the Day of Outrage with the Committee to Honor Black Heroes. And those elders, they laid down a foundation for us where Sonny Carson and them had a thing called a School of Common Sense. And with his son, Lumumba Carson, they helped lay a foundation for conscious hip hop. And So at the time, though, there were record labels that was much more ready and able to balance out the music and put conscious music on the table, whereas nowadays record labels are few and far between. It's more like every man for himself. But the internet is affording us the opportunity to put many conscious and independent artists on the internet, but it's not a mainstream thing now.
Talk to us about some of the artists that specifically about the uniqueness of their contributions. For example, you mentioned KRS-One. Talk to us about his contribution to Black liberation and what ways he did that.
KRS-One, his first album wasn't very conscious. It was called Criminal Minded, and he spoke about what was going on in the streets mostly. But then, you know, when that album became popular, his DJ, Scott LaRock, got murdered in the streets of Highbridge in the Bronx. After that, KRS-One reevaluated the messages that he was putting out in his music and his career, and he helped found an organization that was doing nonviolence. And they did a song called Self-Destruction and created the Stop the Violence movement. From that point on, KRS-One coined the phrase edutainment, and he began making highly conscious and intelligent music that he still continues to make to this day. As a matter of fact, he released a project recently in the last few months and he's still dropping incredible knowledge, wisdom, and understanding. I suggest everybody go back in the day and look at the Boogie Down Productions catalog and bring it up to date, and you'll find incredible, highly conscious music even now.
And, of course, many of us know about the contribution of Public Enemy, but just sort of talk to us about how they came together and some of the contributions they made.
Public Enemy came together in, I think, Long Island. And they started out in radio. Flavor Flav and Chuck were partners doing radio shows. And they came together with the Bomb Squad to create a whole new intricate sound using noises and incredible production technique that, unlike what anybody else had done before, by taking sounds and noises and coming together to create like a whole incredible Black conscious movement out of that. Public Enemy's entire catalog is, once again, just like KRS-One, Public Enemy is still recording, and Chuck and Flav have an incredible new song out now, but the song title is kind of vulgar. I can't even repeat the song title, but if you look up Chuck D and Flav's new song, it's perfect for the times right now.
Right, right. And there was the brother, and I don't know why I'm blanking on his name, because many of us knew him. He was associated with the Malcolm X grassroots movement, actually. Maybe it'll come to me later, but he was not as like famous as KRS-One and Public Enemy, but he was really, really a strong brother that people could call on for many, many, many years. Maybe it'll come back to me. But let's also, were there women who were out there, you know, who also were contributing into the Black liberation movement by way of their music and their you know, their art?
Absolutely. Queen Latifah held it down. And there was a whole group of young ladies that she did a song called Ladies First with. The song wasn't just about the liberation of ladies and looking out for women's rights, but it also spoke about, had heavy imagery about what was going on in South Africa. And, you know, MC Light also was a very important and adding her voice to Self-Destruction, the Stop the Violence movement, and also many other intelligent songs that she made throughout her career. She was very conscious. There's a sister out right now called Sarok, S-A-R-O-C, and she's an incredible artist who's been making monstrous recordings over the last 10 years, actually. You know, she's not on the mainstream with the record labels. But one of the great things about what's going on now is young people can upload their music on the internet and become YouTube and iTunes stars, and you can distribute music on your own without a record label. And Sa Rock has done an incredible job of that. There's a young sister out right now.
Hold on a minute. I'm doing this consciously. I want to talk about. I'm coming to the present. Okay. I still want to continue to talk about the past in terms of those artists in that era. It seemed that there came a time, though, when
lyrics. We can't skip Lauryn Hill. We can't skip Lauryn Hill when we talk about conscious female lyrics. You know what I mean? Lauryn Hill's music is timeless and classic, and it has concepts and understandings that are still very, very relevant today.
But there came a time when, you know, it seemed that, you know, the things seemed to have come apart, you know, and then whether it was gangster rap and various other forms, and then the sort of the internal battles between artists and the, you know, the West Coast, East Coast thing. So to talk to us about, you know, how that came about and really, I guess I'd have to say how destructive it was.
Well, you know, the gangster element and street element has always existed in the Black community and in our culture. The unfortunate thing that happened is that it became unbalanced in the presentation of hip hop in the mainstream when, the independent labels were taken over by the mainstream labels in the early 90s, you know. And I think, honestly, I think hip hop lost its soul when Tupac got arrested for rape in New York, and the conscious community didn't rally around Tupac or come to Tupac's rescue, and we allowed Tupac to be bailed out of jail by Suge Knight. And he was like the rap equivalent of like letting the devil get him instead of us conscious people going to get him. So Tupac owed his allegiance to Suge Knight. And, you know, the rest of that, if you really delve into it, it's a deep and dark history. But I believe that that was a turning point for the conscious community where we lost our soul in hip hop when we didn't step in and represent for Tupac and allow him to be pulled in by the dark side.
Mm. Yeah, and you know, sometimes I get a chance to listen to some of Tupac and actually Biggie too, and there were elements of their music. There were parts of what they had to say that was conscious, was it not?
Well, Tupac especially, you know, Tupac was raised by Black Panthers, you know. And he was a very conscious young man. But, you know, he had to do what he had to do when he owed that $1 million back to Suge. You know what I'm saying? But definitely Biggie also. When you come from the streets of Brooklyn, you can't be just negative. You know, our community has positive and negative influences coming and going in every walk of our life. When we allow them to become unbalanced by other people who finance the negativity and unbalance it and don't put nowhere near an equal amount of money on positive conscious things, people begin to believe that all young people want to hear is negativity, but that's not true.
Mm. Yeah, because I hear some of the, you know, some of Biggie's stuff, and, you know, it's positive, family-oriented, some of it, whatever, and it's just such a tragedy that both of them got taken out, and a lot of other people, I guess, in these beefs and various other things. I think I'm trying to think of somehow or another the name M1 is coming to mind. It was a brother named M1.
M1 was with a group called Dead Prez.
Dead Prez, and, right. Yes. You're supposed to be the one telling me, and I'm the one having with my ancient brain having to remember.
well, M1, Dead Prez comes after Biggie. So it, in your chronology, you mentioned them in the right chronology because Dead Prez came after Biggie. They're from President Street in Brooklyn. Big up to the Dead Prez crew.
Hmm. All right, and then so talk to us about, because I remember, you know, they were really also associated, if I recall, with the Malcolm X grassroots movement, very conscious, very political, you know, and did some really, really good work. So that's why I was trying to just, you know, bring up, you know, their names as well, in terms
Yeah,
of their contributions.
stick man.
All right, well,
M one and stick.
as we transition to some of the more contemporary era, and you already talked about the fact that some people are still, you know, still contributing, I guess there was kind of a turning point when, you know, people like Talib and others came into the scene.
Yes.
So talk to us about sort of, it was almost like a counteroffensive as people tried to reclaim, you know, a space and to amplify it and to really say, you know, the industry might make people millionaires, destroying our community, but there are other people who just consciously said, look, we will make a decent living, but we're going to do that in terms of liberating music, liberating struggle, liberating concepts. So talk to us about how some of that evolved.
Oh, well, it evolved because the in the music industry and even in the contemporary world, there's very few spaces for black radical voices, you know. So it had to come out of the underground from people like Talib and Mos Def and Immortal Technique and you know, Wise Intelligent and you know, a lot of artists. That's why the internet is a blessing and a curse. The blessing is that any artist got the opportunity to promote their things. The curse was that there's so much crap out there that it and not fil there's no filters to filter out the good stuff so that the cream can rise to the top. Every now and then you have anomalies with incredible artists who break through, like Jasiri X, who's voice was just so important at a time when, you know, it was very difficult for a conscious voice to break through the noise. And, you know, when Jasiri X, you know, started making his music when President Obama was running, you know, it really gave us an opportune time and a lane. And I think that, you know, one of the most important things that can happen is people that do have incredible platforms like yourself continue to do amazing things like this and give a voice and a platform and a lane for conscious artists to break through.
Right. Well, we're going to try to do that. And certainly we know Brother Jaziri. We are a little bit limited on time. And I have enough because I was going to say that and earlier I couldn't remember. I remembered now when Jaziri really broke through. He was on with Michael Bazin.
Yes,
That's
sir.
the Jenna, the Jenna, the Jenna. I think it was Jenna
Sixteen and six.
five. Jenna six.
Sixteen and
Okay.
six.
See, yeah, right. And he really, really broke through big time. And has never looked back. Give us three or four other artists out there now. You already mentioned the one sister. You can repeat her. And what we're going to do, by the way, you're going to identify them and we're going to bring them on and let them talk and share and, you know, maybe do a piece and introduce them to our audience this way as well. So talk to us about some of those artists that are out there now.
There's a young lady out there now by the name of No Name who is making a very good name for herself, you know, in this crisis. You know, she's not really trying to bring too much negative attention, but she was calling out other artists who have platforms who are very silent right now. You know what I'm saying? And unfortunately, my man J. Cole stepped in it by mistake. I hope. But J. Cole has been an important voice in hip hop in the last few years also, as well as Kendrick Lamar and Common. And there's so many names that I can throw out there, you know what I'm saying? But newer names are kind of more difficult, but a lot of people haven't even really bridged the gap from the last generation into this generation to even begin a conscious travel in hip hop.
Yeah, but we are interested in some of those lesser known artists, like the sister that you mentioned. Mention her again. That was the so you started, and I sort of said, "Wait a minute," and then we'll bring her back. The sister that you were saying that.
Sarock, SA-ROC, and that sister is from Atlanta, and their crew have been putting it down so hard for like the last 10 years. They have literally hundreds of songs on the internet. You could dive into Sa Rock's catalog alone, and her songs will get you a soundtrack through this movement.
Right. Last question I wanted to put to you has to do with our brother Jaziri X, who, you know, is really blown up and really doing some incredible pieces. He has the One Hood Media Center right there in Pittsburgh. It's staying in the hood with his folk and whatever. And I was thinking about the Genesis, and in fact, Jaziri X is on the National African American Reparations Commission. We used his piece, Don't Let Them Get Away with Murder, twice recently, both on the 99th anniversary of the destruction of Tulsa and Black Wall Street, as well as on the Juneteenth forum that the National African American Reparations Commission just had. And I'm wondering whether or not we might get him, you know, to aggregate some of these younger artists to begin to talk about, you know, it might be hip hop artists for reparations and HR 40 or some such thing. And drop some pieces. And the centerpiece of it, I hope, will be looking at Tulsa. Coming right behind you is going to be Reverend Robert Turner. He's the pastor of the historic Vernon AME Church. And, you know, the slogan that we used for that first forum was, "Their blood cries out." And in that piece, he explained to me, I just talked to him today about why he came to that, because he's saying our ancestors, you know, 300 slaughtered, massacred in Tulsa, and it has not been vindicated. Their blood cries out. And this seems to me, as I was thinking about how Jaziri said, don't let them get away with murder, it seems to me that I could just see Jaziri putting some pieces together with some other folks saying, you know, around their blood cries out in Tulsa. You know what I mean? You know, and pushing it out there to begin to build popular consciousness, because you can educate through the music. But Black Wall Street, man, the destruction of Black people and Black property, one of the most horrific massacres in the history of this country. We can't let that go.
Absolutely. They want to talk about looting?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Talk about looting. It's like Joy Reid said, and we were so happy to have Joy Reid be a part of our forum. She did an excellent job, but she went off a couple of weeks ago and said, you want to talk about looting, you know, looting and riots. That's what went down in Tulsa. Mm-hmm. You know, what you're saying, yep, in the streets are uprisings. They're uprisings taking place, you know, and even sometimes, unfortunately, when there may be violence associated with it, it is really political violence. It is the voice, as Martin Luther King said, you know, of those who aren't heard, you know, who are actually speaking out in those terms. Well, Brother Paradise, as I said before, we're going to keep coming to you. We have to, you know, things are moving so fast out there that we haven't had a chance to sit down or at least to consult, but we are definitely going to get some of those younger artists and some who've been out there for a while. Sa Rock, we would like to get her, some others that you may know, to have come on Vantage Point, share their thoughts, let people know what they're doing, you know, maybe lay down a piece, and we'll get the word out that way. And we want to continue to build this aspect of what we're doing here on WBAI, but also with the Institute of the Black World 21st Century and the National African American Reparations Commission. I know I've already asked you to collaborate on a piece on the 100th anniversary of Garvey's convening of the Negro Peoples of the World in 1920. So we're gonna be joined at the hip, my brother. So really appreciate you so much.
No problem. Also like to pick up my brother Jay from X Clan. He just dropped a hot new joint on his Facebook page. Look up Brother Jay, Bro Jay X Clan on Facebook, and you'll hear some hot new music on the 30th anniversary of our first album, To the East Blackwoods.
All right. Okay, my brother. Got to move on. So thank you so much for spending time with us this afternoon here on Vantage Point.
Peace and love.
All right. Peace and love. Well, you know, Paradise Ray has a lot to offer. We're going to keep tapping into his wisdom, his knowledge. We'll be bringing it to you here on vantage point here on WBAI and giving some of those young artists opportunities to, in fact, share their thoughts. And I do hope they will put something together around Tulsa. I'm going to be asking Jaziri X to do that. So we're hoping that that will actually materialize. So we're moving on now to our next segment. Tulsa has been very much in the news, and we want to continue to talk about Tulsa, particularly in terms of the madness that has been developing in the streets out there. So we're now joined by the pastor of the historic Vernon AME Church in Tulsa, Oklahoma. He was on 60 Minutes last week, and we had hoped to have him on. It was now no fault of his own. One of the major major cell phone services just went out, and whole bunches of people we knew could not connect. But we are blessed to have him today. Again, as Reverend Robert Turner, who's the pastor of the historic Vernon AME Church, and we'll tell you in a minute why it's historic. Pastor Turner, welcome to Vantage Point.
Hey, how you doing, Dr. Daniels? Glad to be here.
Well, I'm glad we were able to get you here, because last week, I don't mind commentating and so forth, but I had to do like about 20 minutes worth of commentating last week in your absence. but that's all right. We can lay it down. Well, first and foremost, you are right there in Tulsa. And of course, last week we were already wanted to get your perspective on how the community was feeling about, Agent Orange, as Spike Lee calls him, coming to Tulsa initially on Juneteenth, and then he just backed it up one day later. So I don't want to obviously devote the whole time talking about that, but you were there on the ground. You saw what happened the day on Juneteenth itself. You saw how the community responded. Give our audience a sense of how the community felt about, the Orange Man coming to Tulsa and what actually transpired in terms of responses.
Well, the community was in outrage that this president chose Juneteenth first day and then later weekend to come and announce his candidacy. Not just black, but black, white, Latinx, Native American, young, old. People were just outraged that you would choose this time to start your campaign in the midst of a health pandemic and social unrest throughout the country, where citizens have been calling for action. And instead of doing presidential action, he's doing presidential politics. And we were tired of it. And people came out in the droves to protest. And we came out on Juneteenth to celebrate and to still demand from him, some action. We don't need candidate Trump. We need President Trump. And he is showing who he is, that he has not changed, that he only is concerned about himself. During the time of high unemployment numbers, a health pandemic, and social unrest, he's choosing to think about himself and get reelected when he hasn't even finished out this current term.
Right, absolutely. Well, it was good to see on television to see people rallying and doing it with discipline, dignity, socially. Mm-hmm. Distance, the mask, your mask on, and all those kind of things, showing people, how it should actually be done. And of course, the Make America Great Again rally turned out not to be so great. Actually, there's a saying, you know how old folks say, God don't like ugly, so it flopped.
That's right.
Sure enough, flopped. Anyway, let's talk about the church where you pastor. The Greenwood Black Wall Street is sacred ground. But I want you to talk to us about the historic Vernon AME Church and how it fits into how it fits into the tragedy that took place? I mean, why Vernon AME is so important as sacred ground?
Well, being originating in 1905 in the living room of one of our founding members, and then going to being O.W. Gurley Hall and building on Archer, and in 1908 coming to Greenwood and adopting the name Vernon. Vernon, we are one of the few churches in possibly America that's named not in honor of a street, an apostle, or whatever. We're named in honor of a black man named William Tecumseh Vernon. And his parents named him in honor of General William Tecumseh Sherman, the general who traveled to Savannah and was talking with the leaders in the black community, Arthur Sherman Field, or number 15, which we also know as 40 Acres and a Mule. So this church has always had a proud history of black excellence and black achievement. And so we chose to name ourselves Vernon AME Church. And we were the pride of Greenwood. We the only church on Greenwood in the midst of all these businesses and theaters and hotels. You saw this majestic church, and our membership grew. And Greenwood, for your audience to know, is kind of like the Rodeo Drive of Beverly Hills, the Beale Street of Memphis, the Wall Street of New York, Auburn Avenue of Atlanta. It is the main heartbeat. It was the main heartbeat of the Black Wall Street district. That's why we refer to the district as Greenwood, because Greenwood was the place where every business, everybody wanted to live off Greenwood. Everybody wanted to eat on Greenwood. Everybody wanted to shop on Greenwood. And you have this church on Greenwood. And our membership just grew. And in 1914, we started building our basement. In 1919, we finished it because we really had no rush because we were doing so well where we were. And we had an event that happened here. In 1921, we were building our superstructure on top of our basement because our membership was just growing so fast and so large. And as a result of that, during the race massacre of 1921, when they killed, looted, massacred, really genocide of African Americans on this sacred land, and dropped bombs from the sky, they destroyed our superstructure that we were building. But miraculously, the basement underneath that superstructure, the four walls and a good bit of our roof of it survived. How it survived, being a man of faith, nothing but the grace of God. We also know that we had members hiding in the basement. And if you saw pictures of our basement, the devastation, you will see the ash comes up through all the window sills, but there's a back section of the windows that you don't see ash coming out because people were in there hiding and they were keeping the fire out. I get goosebumps just thinking about it. And to this day, it still is here. Our basement is here. In 1922, we put the windows back in. 1925, we started building our sanctuary, the superstructure. We started to rebuild that. This is the people that, in spite of not receiving any insurance claim, that we filed our insurance claim. These are people who had just lost their own houses, just lost their own businesses, just lost their own loved ones and friends, and people who couldn't even bury their own dead because the white folks in the massacre dumped our dead into mass graves where they still lie to this day. But these are the very people, some 4 years later, built the superstructure that the massacre had just torn down in 1921 on top of the basement that survived. And that superstructure we worship in to this day. And our stained glass windows serve as a memorial to them because we put the names of the folks who contributed to building our church. And the chancel rail, which is worth over $500,000, and our stained glass windows now worth over $1 million. But unfortunately, our church saw a decline after urban they call renewal, we call removal. And as a result, our church sanctuary is in much need of repair right now to this day.
Wow. Well, I really wanted you to tell that story. And really, and one of the things is gentrification. I mean, gentrification is, communities got destroyed by urban renewal or urban removal, micro removal, we called it, and then outright destruction. Mm-hmm. And then now you have this insidious thing called gentrification taking place. It's also destroying our communities. And, but I guess the key thing is, there's a determination, because the utter outrage is that despite the demands, despite the hearings and all kinds of programs that went on, Tulsa, the descendants, including this 105-year-old woman whose name I'll ask you to utter because I don't remember it, but she's still there, have not received reparations. And I know that as we were doing the Tulsa Forum, the 99th anniversary with the ACLU and Human Rights Watch and NARC, obviously played a leading role in that, you asked that their blood cries out, which was kind of jolting, be added to the overall theme. Talk to us about why you were so insistent that that be a part of the theme.
Because, and as you stated, Mother Lessie Benefield Randall, one of the sole survivors from the race massacre, a dear, sweet woman that I've had the opportunity to pray with and do communion with, but she, even hearing her story, she recalls seeing people, just dead people, babies, children, lying in the street, innocent lives that had just begun to live, taken in just sheer hatred, sheer racist actions that were state-sponsored. Because what people don't know is, a lot of folks, the deputized members of that white mob. So all of this was done under the so-called color of law. Mm. And the bodies were killed. And it reminds me, and these are people killing the other citizens. Like, we were not, the folk in Greenwood were American. They were Tulsans. They were born and raised here. But yet they were killed by their own brothers. And because they had different color skin. And so when I think about that, I think about the story of Cain and Abel in the Bible, and how Cain killed Abel because he was jealous of Abel, because God loved and favored Abel's offerings. And Cain killed Abel. First murder in the Bible. And one day God, the Bible teaches in Genesis, came up and saw Cain, and he said, "Where's your brother Abel?" And Cain said the very famous words we all know today, "Am I my brother's keeper?" And then God says, "Well, what have you done? What did you do? Your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground." God knew what Cain did, but God wanted Cain to confess what he did.
Right.
Because Cain's blood had been Abel's blood had been crying out to God because it was killed innocently and had not been justified, had not been atoned for, had not, Cain had not been brought to justice for killing Abel. And God rendered judgment on Cain. And to this day, the blood of our ancestors that were killed during the race massacre of 1921 still cries out. Mm. I feel it every time I walk through these doors. Every time I walk on Greenwood, I feel it. And it is something that I cannot get used to. And it is hearing their cries that gives me my passion to go out every week at City Hall and demand justice on behalf of those ancestors who were killed.
Now, let me ask you this. Certainly, with your appearance on CBS, the 60 Minutes, as well as the forum that we did with the ACLU, of course, we just had another big forum, and then Trump coming, you know, also brought attention to Tulsa. I understand that Russell Westbrook is about to, wants to do a documentary. I do hope he's in conversation with the committee, your committee, and the committee's on the ground to get that done, so he's not sort of just dropping in from the outside. But I'm wondering, has there been an increase of interest flowing your way? I mean, do you find more and more people now beginning to understand what happened?
We are all across America since the 60 Minute piece aired, since the MSNBC piece aired that I was featured on, Andrea Mitchell's just the Chuck Todd piece and CNN. I mean, there's been so much attention given to this space. It has helped raise awareness. But Dr. Daines, I hope that awareness motivates people to act. You know,
this
is something that America did to her own citizens. I was interviewed by a Canadian TV station a few days ago, and they were appalled when I mentioned to them that the first time airplanes were used to terrorize Americans was not at 9/11, was not at Pearl Harbor, but it was right here in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And whereas we went to Afghanistan, we killed Saddam Hussein and his two sons. We destroyed, and we still are fighting Al-Qaeda and ISIS and ISIL and all those groups to this day. And we rebuilt Afghanistan after we destroyed it. After Pearl Harbor, we went and bombed. We dropped the atomic bomb on Hiroshima. To this day, you can still feel radioactivity at Chernobyl. And we are, to this very day, the military for Japan, because they cannot have a standing military. Why? Because the last time they did, they dropped bombs on American soil. But for the very first time, the airplanes were used to drop bombs on American soil happened right here in Tulsa. And the perpetrators were white. It wasn't Al-Qaeda. It wasn't Japanese. They were white men flying planes owned by oil companies. And the first victims of aerial terrorism were black people. Right. And this country has not even arrested one of the members of the white mob. There has not even been an investigation by the local district attorney's office to what happened. Not even the state attorney general's office or the U.S. attorney general's office. So to me, all three of those positions, and I don't care who was in them, Democrat or Republican, are a farce. Because how dare you go overseas? How dare you go overseas and you try to say you uphold human rights and you mandate that these other foreign leaders treat their people with dignity? Well, we got folks still buried in mass graves right here in Tulsa, and we have never had one federal investigation or one state investigation or even one DA's investigation into what happened. So it has brought great awareness. But I hope that this awareness also brings action.
Well, we're going to certainly try to help that to happen. Once we completed the forum and we had an after discussion, as convener of the National African American Reparations Commission, I made a commitment that as we proceed with whatever we're doing with NARC, we're going to continue to focus on Tulsa. That's why our brother Quincy Ritten, I'm misspelling his name, but the brilliant artist. That's why we started with his piece and concluded it. That's why we had you be a part to give a perspective in the forum that we had on Juneteenth. And what we want to do now is we are going to invite you, Reverend Turner, to become actually a member of the National African American Reparations Commission, so that as we do our work as a commission, and this is an outstanding body of Black activists, advocates, scholars, faith leaders, we want to make sure that Tulsa is always there, but you also will be a part of this broad-based discussion about how we move reparations forward, because we are going to see that the blood that cries out will be vindicated, because there will be an apology, there will be restitution, and there will be justice. and then, you know, the land can be healed. So I'm out of time, but thank you so much for joining us today and
thank
sharing
with
our audience.
Thank you so much for having me, and I'm honored for the invitation.
All right. Well, it's going to be coming, and we're looking forward to having you be on the National African American Reparations Commission.
Wow.
All right. Yes, Reverend Robert Turner. Again, you hear the historic Vernon AME Church right here. You've heard it on WBAI. You heard, and I think it was Gary Bird who was talking about it. Certainly our studio producer points out the fact that you get a chance that, you don't just get a snippet. You get a chance to hear the kind of in-depth sharing of knowledge that you just heard here on WBAI in a way that you might not hear it otherwise. On 60 Minutes, I do notice that the word reparations never came up. They never even asked about reparations because I guess they wanted to show the pain and everything. And by the way, that's a good thing. We take whatever we can get and we organize around it. But it was noticeable that they did not ask, or at least if it was asked, it was edited out. What about reparations for Tulsa? Well, the blood of our ancestors cries out. And here on WBAI, that cry has been heard, and we are going to continue to focus on it until justice is done for our sisters and brothers and our ancestors in Tulsa. We've just got about 3 minutes left. I talked about WBAI buddies. This was not necessarily devoted to that today, but they've asked us, and correctly so, on every broadcast to try to increase the number of WBAI buddies. Right, the number of WBAI buddies. Our studio announcer just talked about it, what that really means. We're trying to increase it, trying to get hundreds of people to sign up to be WBAI buddies. And that means if you can afford $10 or more, you become a sustaining contributor to WBAI. And that's so important, brothers and sisters and friends. It's so important. WBAI, as I said before, is the citadel of resistance. And we are in a moment unlike any I have ever seen in my lifetime. National African American Reparations Commission is going to be helping to shape this discussion towards reparatory justice. And that reparatory justice is not business as usual. It's not the system as usual. In order for this to be changed, reparations must be the center of a new social order in this country. I mean, no. This ain't, when we get finished, it ain't going to look the same way it looks now. It ain't about a check. It ain't just about some property. To vindicate what was done to indigenous people, First Nation people, as Reverend Barbara calls them, what was done in terms of the enslavement of Africans cannot simply be rectified by reparations in terms of just... Because you can't pay. There's no price that you can pay. The system has to be changed. And we're going to be fighting for the change of that system. And we need WBAI buddies. We need to keep this voice alive. I got 1 minute left. Five people. I just need five people. 516-620-3602. 516-620-3602. If you heard the show today, you appreciated the show today, you heard what Reverend Turner talked about, you looked at, and I'm getting asked you to go to the website, ibw21.org, to see the entire forum that we did over the weekend, over 110,000 views so far. You understand why this is important. 516-620-3602. Thank you, WBAI buddies. We need four more. 516-620-3602. We must have WBAI buddies. Are there people who can give $25 a month? Are there people out there who can give $50 a month? Is there somebody give $100 a month? Yes, there is. There are people who can do that. Step up to the plate. Do it now. The blood of our ancestors cries out that this message get across, that this station stay alive, so that there can be the vindication of all of the atrocities and all of the kind of transgressions. This is the moment to purge the virus, the pandemic of racism and white supremacy from the system. Call us right now, 516-620-3602, 516-620-3602, or go to Give to WBAI, become a WBAI buddy today. This is the Professor Dr. Ron Daniels. We're coming back to see you again next week here on WBAI 99.5 FM. See you again next week.
Time is really wasted. There's no guarantee. Smile is in the making.